Tonight's episode of the 31st Lap Podcast is brought to you by DirtTrackDigest.com. If it's on dirt, it's on Dirt Track Digest.
This is the 31st Lap Podcast, recorded live in the studios of FingerLakes1.com in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. And now, your host, Chris Marquardt.
Good afternoon. Good evening. Welcome to episode number 73 of the 31st Lap. Or 73, what is that? That's a Crash Course reference. Sorry, that was Monday. Episode 153 of the 31st Lap. Joining me in studio, we've got the one and only making a return to the 31st Lap, Stephen Evans. Welcome to the show. Hey.
There we go.
I didn't want you to feel left out.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk dirt track racing.
Well, it's been a tumultuous week, to say the least, for dirt track racing. Most specifically, Rolling Wheels Raceway Park. We're going to get into that momentarily. Mike Mallett was going to be here in studio, and he ran into some problems, literally, with his car. He is now going to be driving a Toyota, which is a huge change of pace for him, but thankfully he's going to be getting somewhere around 135 miles per gallon with this vehicle, so it's roughly the size of the chair that you're sitting in, and this was a surprise to him. It's a new-to-him vehicle, and it really caught him off guard, and John is in the process of moving out of his townhouse. He's got to be out of there by the 1st of June, and they're renovating the house that they just purchased. And in the midst of all of it, the washing machine that was left there had leaked water all over the existing floor.
Oh, ouch.
For about 10 years. So it was a stone's throw from falling into the basement. So they're working they've been working until the middle of the night all week. That's one of the reasons why he wasn't with us at Auburn Mall, and he isn't with us tonight, and likely won't be with us next week. But anyway, I happened to be cruising Facebook and found an update that came to my page that you had released a story on Race Chaser Online, having spoke with some of the folks from Rolling Wheels, which has been the centerpiece topic. Mike and I have referenced a number of times that there hasn't been a breaking story. There hasn't been a huge landmark story that's come out of the offseason. Well, we've got it now. Full steam ahead since the sale was made final. Everybody kind of looked skeptically at the schedules that were passed out at the Parts Peddler show. Drifted a little bit back into obscurity and has come roaring back with a vengeance. And then Steven had a story online regarding Rolling Wheels Raceway Park and its status, and now we are wondering if there's ever going to be a race again at Rolling Wheels Raceway.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote in the story, it's fascinating if you look back at the timeline and just look at all of the things that have come out and the story, how it's developed. I mean, this was a track that was purchased by Pay Dirt Racing that, you know, we thought, wow, this could be a really great thing if everything comes to fruition as they say it was going to. And, you know, as we've gone further and further in the process here, you know, certainly some things, you know, and we were talking about this before we came on, Chris, is the, you know, all of the promises that were made, some of the large payouts that were promised. I mean, I don't even know that we're going to get to that point of seeing whether those payouts are as promised or not. But you know, now it makes the race fans and the race teams question: was there ever any intent to run this facility as a racetrack?
I mean, it opens the doors for tons more speculation. And you had that conversation that we had talked about with one of the Rolling Wheel staffers, which in itself brings up a whole bunch of questions. Who does that person work for if the future of the track is in question? Or are we still trying to go ahead with racing? They were upset about the negativity that has surrounded everything. I don't think anybody necessarily wanted to be negative, but when you have the track record that dirt racing has had, where you've had so many people that come in with a huge hat yet have no cattle, you're skeptical. And there's some pretty serious money on the line, and there's been additional things that have come out that perhaps that wasn't to win as much paying for his place as it was available to win heat money, incentives, first to last purse for the feature event, things along those lines. So, again, the water continues to get murkier before it's getting clearer, and what clarity we do have is leaning a little bit further away from the result that we all wanted to see happen in roughly 2 months from right now at the end of May when the race was scheduled. The other breaking news that came with that was that Canandaigua Motorsports Park now picking up officially, again, that's June 2nd date with a Super Dirt Car Series paired with Empire Super Sprint's kickoff to the Sprint Car Speed Week. That race, which that unto itself developed a life of its own, that race was supposed to be at Rolling Wheels. Then during the banquet, Jeremy Corcoran released, and I put a phone call into him to get some feedback on how this timeline itself played out. Jeremy was quick to announce that after ESS had booked that it was going to be a twin bill with a modified series. The Super Dirt Car Series was going to be at Canandaigua doing second. Then didn't we have some comments on Facebook? Some phone calls are made. And after it's been announced that Canandaigua has this date, a couple days removed from the Syracuse show, from the Gator Expo, Motorsports Expo, well, the date's still at Rolling Wheels. The schedule hasn't been changed. Nothing's official.
And now there's a meeting with
Rolling Wheels. Now there's meeting upon meeting upon meeting. And that ends up leading us to the point where we're at right now, where what initially was announced about a week and a half ago is in fact what is going to be. So there's just the turmoil, and we've got this happening over here at the same time as all this discussion is circulating about what could potentially happen to the grandstand setup and the equestrian center and all that other stuff at the New York State Fairgrounds, which would eliminate the mile track. So it's a tumultuous time. It harkens back a little bit to a lot of the racing sentiment. However, this is directed individually at a single track versus the entire sanctioning body of where we were at in 2004 and 2005.
Yeah. And you know, looking back on all of this, I mean, you know, the Rolling Wheels situation, I mean, after Motorsports Expo and seeing that the release of, you know, the Super Dirt Car Series event going to Canandaigua, seeing that there was nothing from the Super Dirt Car Series or Dirt Car, you know, and then to find out that there was meetings that were going to take place with Rolling Wheels, that kind of made some folks put the brakes on and say, okay, maybe everything's not quite a sealed deal with Rolling Wheels yet, you know. And I feel like most race fans that really love dirt track racing have tried to hold on what little bit of hope that they could.
Listen, I think everybody wants to see a race there. Everybody wants that place to continue racing. And you're, you know, the idea that there's sentiment and negativity. Well, you put a lot out there.
Yeah,
you know, you stuck your neck way out there, and without a great deal, unfortunately, because everybody is so prone to disappointment in racing. When you put that much on the table at one time and say, here it is, yet it's behind a curtain, as it were. There's a lot of that. You need to have absolute transparency. I'm going to reference back to Mike Jackson from BlackRock, someplace that you're intimate with. When whoops, that wasn't any good. When he came on here, he had absolute transparency. He answered every question possible to the best of his ability. And what he couldn't answer, he said, hey, this is how to get a hold of me. Let me find out, and we'll find out more. And we haven't had all that. You know, when you look at some of the stuff that Mike has encountered and that you've run into, it really puts it into perspective where you're going to struggle to really want to latch on and say yes, let's go with this, because you don't have the answers.
Exactly, and that's, you know, even to the conversation that I had yesterday in preparing the article that we put out today. You know, there's still, like you said, Chris, there's still a ton of questions that remain even with that conversation, because, now this person that's been given permission to field questions and is, quote unquote, you know, briefed on the situation of what the future of that property is going to be. But yet they still, you know, well, they're going to be announced next week, but we can answer questions. And
well, for 2 weeks, an ad ran in Aerial to Racing News that next week all your questions are going to be answered.
Yeah, exactly. and you know what, Chris? Here's the thing. The fans, the teams, the drivers, none of these folks, you can't pull the wool over their eyes. You can't do these kind of things and think, oh, it's okay. Nobody's going to notice. Nobody's going to. You just can't do that.
Right.
With the race fans.
The deep race fan is an educated one. And there's not much that's going to get put over.
Mm-mm.
You know? And that's to their credit. You know, that makes the promoters be honest. And Mike and Paul Small, who were both on the show, we were live at Auburn Mall, talked at length about how you almost have to earn the right to go head-to-head with other tracks. And I get it's a business. You can do whatever you want to do. But if you want to have the bulk of – look at what Brett Deo did. This is a prime example. Brett took the Short Track Super Nationals and then built that into a second race and then built that, and it continued to expand. And it took him years to make that happen, to come out of the blocks. To sort of storm the gates, as it were, with the guns blazing and set all these astronomical, remarkable, and very marketable options and not have those answers to sort of back it up when everybody looks at us and say, what? It's gonna breed an interesting atmosphere that probably isn't going to be the most welcoming.
Yeah. Well, and to comparatively speaking now, I mean, when Brett puts out, you know, a dollar amount of, you know, this is what you're going to race to win, and this is what it pays back through. I mean, he has now earned that credibility that when Brett Deo says it's this, it's that, and probably a little bit more.
Drivers are going to look at that and say, you know what, if this is up against this date, I'm okay having to decide.
Yeah.
They're not saying this is up against this date, and I know nothing about this other place. I'm going to let everybody else go and see where the cards fall, and I'm just going to stick with what I know is going to work.
Yeah. And it's not like they were just trying to book up against one place or this one track. I mean, if you didn't run night one of the Detonator, which, you know, was kind of, at this point, seems to have been appropriately named.
Yeah. Whoa.
If you didn't run night one of that show, you couldn't run for the big money on Sunday, which even the Sunday date, when folks asked, you know, well, you're going up against Utica Rome, and there wasn't a clear answer. Well, hopefully we'll get them out of there in time to go to Utica Rome. I mean, it's not like you were just going up against Canandaigua's Dirt Car Series race on the Wednesday of that. I mean, there were multiple areas where there was just a, you know, a blatant
complete thumbing of the nose.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to do this, and we don't care because we're here and we're going to do it.
Now, at that point, when that Detonator stuff was released, I don't remember on the timeline, but I believe that we were. The inference was that Rolling Wheels was going to be a Dirt Series track. Can't go up against those,
right?
You can't. I mean, right. that's part of the deal. But again, we came to learn in more detail that there was no contract. Who knows with at all anybody, you know, which begs more questions about the schedules that were passed out in at the Parts Peddler, which had a number of logos on them, which those were subsequently removed from the schedule cards that were passed out at the Motorsports Expo. Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you remember that conversation?
I do. I do. I do. And it just, I mean, you guys talked about it. I mean, everybody in the industry has talked about, you know, how many pictures have you seen of the booth that was set up? Yeah. For the expo. I mean, the expo is a huge show, and that's kind of, you know, Shane Andrews said it best. This is the unofficial kickoff to the 2015 season.
And it has been for years.
Exactly. So, you know, to get a booth, you know, at the last second, and to see some of the pictures that have gone around social media about that booth, I mean, you really had to have gotten a sense that weekend, put all of the, you know, affiliations being dissolved aside, that presence there did not do them did not do their situation any good. It didn't earn any credibility with race fans, and really kind of just has really built and helped this story kind of snowball into what it's evolved into, you know, as we look at it tonight.
Yeah, so what do you think is next?
Well, honestly, for the conversation that I had with the self-proclaimed social media coordinator, who's supposed to be announced the next week, they say. I after that conversation, I really have a great feeling about the racetrack even being operated as a racetrack in the future. I've even thought to, okay, maybe it's just not going to happen this year. Maybe they need to sort out what they want to do with the property and then maybe try and go at it next year. But then again, is it going to be the same deal that we've seen the last two off seasons? We've gone through this twice now.
Right.
And a wheel has not been turned under this ownership group, and this is now the second time we've been through this situation.
Right. Yeah, it's the plot certainly thickens, and
I hate to say it, but I feel like the days of seeing racing action there is in major jeopardy.
I have a picture of my boy Alan and myself taking him to his first race there. It was his first race ever. I mean, he'd never been to a dirt race before. We took him there to see the modified program one time, and we got a picture underneath the bleachers, and the value of that picture, given the stuff that has transpired over the last 2-3 days, it's made that significantly more valuable because mm-hmm. there was actually cars there.
Yeah.
You know? And we got through hot laps and I think 3 heat races, and then we had to go because he was all done. But, you know, we at least got to say that you know, we saw cars race at Rolling Wheels, which is means a lot, and it continues to, and I think I can speak for a lot of people where we do want to see racing.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to see this place go. They don't want to see it shut down. They don't want to see it turn into a Lowe's or a housing complex or what have you. Just want to see it operate so that the guys that have all the money invested in the cars aren't sticking their neck out so far with no answers. I think that's generally the feeling across the board. And they don't like this whole, you know, veil of silence that has sort of prevailed. We saw in the Aerial Racing news story that Paul Small was announced as a player in that group. He vehemently said that he has not at all agreed to anything, and this was as of the Albemarle show Saturday. Vehemently agreed that he was not under contract in any way, didn't agree to do anything, wasn't going to be doing anything at that moment. And at that moment, what's that mean? It means right now.
Yeah.
2 hours later, he could have signed it. You know what I mean? He could have walked to the other end of the mall and signed it. But at that moment, there was nothing room to go on. So I'm wondering what changed within that dynamic, if at all, and who it was that you were talking to on Facebook as the Rolling Wheels staffer that ended up being quoted in your story. And who knows? Did it ever cross your mind as you were sitting there talking to that person that maybe that account had been hacked and this is somebody just pulling your leg?
Because
they had enough details, but
yeah, I mean that's the thing is there was enough details that we discussed that, you know, and I actually, you mentioned that you go back to, you know, something that the page had posted that they had issues with their Facebook page and you know somebody getting into the account and whatnot, but. I mean, this person really had, you know, enough information regarding the situation that, you know, that we felt comfortable, you know, going ahead with that. And again, you go back to when they had said that, you know, they thought they had issues with their account. You know, some of the things that they talked about, it wasn't the fact that, you know, there was it could have been problems with the account. It was people were upset with you not answering questions openly and honestly, or if you couldn't answer the question, just saying we don't have an answer for that right now. That's where, you know, the conversation yesterday really played right into that hand of, you know, it's not a matter of not being able to answer the question. It was just skirting around the issue.
Right.
But then, you know, yesterday them saying, look, there's been so much that has transpired that now, you know, the possibility of even operating as a racetrack is in doubt. Which, when you look at the situation, even if they had wanted to move forward with plans, that was going to be a pretty tall task. When you don't necessarily have the fan support, and all these questions surrounding it, I think it would have been a tall task for them to get up and running. And who knows? They may still try and go at it.
It'd be great if they did. It would be great if they did, because you know what? When those gates opened, you have no idea how many people would be there, because they're all just in there waiting to see what you get to see. You know, I really believe that if they had one race there, it would be one of the most remarkably well attended races ever. But there's other questions and stuff that we came across that made us wonder. Mike and I, we were talking, made us wonder a little bit more about what's going on. For example, there's all these tickets that have been sold.
Yeah.
Where do you buy the tickets? I have not come across anybody who says, yes, I have a ticket. We have social media. Use your phone. Take a picture of your ticket. Post it on there. Love to see it.
Yeah.
Haven't seen it yet. Were tickets not issued? I get it. You know, it could have been will call, 7,000 will calls. It'll be a bit of a line, but it's fine. We'll go. I'll get through. Just makes you wonder, and it's a sad situation. I don't think that anybody wants to see it crash and burn. I just want honesty, you know. Switching gears a little bit, you've been busy this off season, a little.
just a little.
Excited about BlackRock or what?
I gotta tell you, I have not been this excited going into a race season, probably since back in the day when we were still racing at Dundee. Our family has so much history with the track between, you know, the Ovens family and the Carrick family that, you know, to get this opportunity from Mike and Sue, when I understood that they were going to be taking over the track, I mean, actually prior to them working with Dean Hogue to lease the Speedway, I had been in talks with Dan Harpel of also being involved with the track, and to speak with Mike and Sue and kind of give them, you know, my history with the Speedway and how much, you know, it would be a dream to work in the booth with Mel Thomas, who I've worked with for so many years, him and Matt doing, you know, filming at tracks and things of that nature. Just really excited about this season, and as though that wasn't exciting enough, I mean, you've got the modifieds coming back, which, yeah, you know, we're really building some really good momentum there. I think Mike and Sue both know, and I'm sure the race fans know, that taking this leap and bringing the modifieds back was certainly a risk on their part, but I think the feedback they're getting back about guys that want to come race there, both weekly and on a part-time basis, I think they're going to see that risk was, you know, was well worth it.
It was a well-calculated risk, very well-calculated. I did not see it panning out this way. I really thought that the number of, I mean, think about since 2004, I think, 2004, 2005 was, 2004 was when they went to sprint cars, I think.
Yes.
And then we had another change of night and division again in 2005. And then it was a couple years after that where we went to sportsman. So we're looking at, you know, this is a fourth, fifth division change in a 10-year span. That's a lot for a track.
It is.
We're going back to the modifieds after all these guys have already converted over to sportsman. You didn't see that stable crossover from Woodhull consistently. You didn't see the crossover from Canandaigua,
right,
regularly. It was sort of a group of guys that sort of just kind of gravitated and hung in that area. There wasn't extreme crossover anyway. It's really panning out. It's panning out well, and there's a lot of rumors of the drivers that are talking about going back down there, which is great. The modifieds themselves haven't been there in ages other than select shows.
Right.
And to have the big block, small block program together is going to be cool. And to keep the sportsman is a huge move because you're not losing anybody. Trimming the fat with some of the other divisions, it's painful for the guys that have that equipment. But those guys, you know, you got to do what's best for your business too. So those guys, unfortunately, you're upsetting those drivers and the fans that come with them, but hopefully they'll find someplace else to land. And streamlining the program to what they've got on deck right now, it looks really good. Yeah. It looks really good. I'm excited for what's going on at that track. It's a fun place to watch a race. And Mike is he's been venturing into deeper and deeper water the last couple of years, and now he's taking the dive. It's really turning out that it was well calculated and well played cards.
Well, and you know the cool thing too is to go through this process with them. Mike and Sue, I think, have realized every day as we get closer to opening day just how big of a task this is going to be. But at the same time, they have hit the ground running as far as, I mean, we have, I don't have the schedule sitting here in front of me, but I mean, we have at least half of the nights during the regular season sponsored.
Right.
Which has been a couple seasons. I mean, last year, Dan Harpel did everything he could just to get the Speedway operational by opening night. So he really never even had that opportunity to go out and talk to some
folks.
He didn't
have the off-season to race between doors.
Exactly, exactly. So they knew that that was something that was very important to get done, and they have really done a great job with that so far. We've got three or four of our divisions are now sponsored, which, again, same thing. You haven't seen that in a few seasons there. And, you know, so not only are we getting drivers saying, we want to come make your place our Friday night home, now we're getting marketing partners that are saying the same things. Businesses that come on board, you know, one night in particular, the Jeff Searles Memorial Night.
Jeffy,
it is not going to be the same to not see Jeffy over in turn two on the pit side of the grandstands at Black Rock. But, you know, to have a business that was a longtime supporter of the Sutherland crew to come, say, you know, to call up and say, we want to do this. How can we work with you guys to make this happen? To me, that is a huge leap for the track, certainly for Mike and Sue, but for the track to try and start writing this next chapter. And we've had a few chapters the last two or three years, but to really start this next chapter, everything has been so positive. And it's been unique to see how much positivity has been surrounding our track and some of the things that we're trying to do. It's been phenomenal. So
transitioning in addition to being the track announcer to the PR guy.
Yeah. Well, that's the easy part, right? Is if you're announcing it, PR is easy, right?
PR is easy. It's not hard. Just get the right press releases and hit the, make sure the easiest part about being a PR guy. Right, and you can agree with this. Nobody else is listening right now anyway, so you can it's just us. Just hit the delete button. Right?
Right.
I don't remember seeing that message, right? Is that easy enough? That's terrible. You don't delete messages in PR. You can't do that.
No. It's yeah. No, that's
put away the torches, put away the pitchforks, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
Relax.
Yeah. It's that's one part that I haven't you know, I can go to races and write up a story. I mean, anybody that can convey their thoughts with the keyboard can you know, kind of formulate something that way. But you know, now to have, you know, what you're working on be kind of the face for the divisions, the drivers, and the marketing partners. I mean, that's a big task in itself. And when I talked to Mike and Sue, that was one thing that we discussed, was the fact that, you know, announcing and getting the crowd involved in the show the night of is a big part. But with them coming in as brand new promoters, the PR side and how you factor in things like social media into that, was going to be just as big
right.
as race night. So I'm just thrilled that they have asked me to be a part of that, and it's been a learning experience, but it's been a lot of fun too, because again, you just go back to all the positivity so far. That makes it fun. That makes it, you know, when you have to sit down late at night, you know, after you come home from working the full-time job, you know, that makes it easier to put those extra hours in.
And Oswego Speedway is done an exceptional job using
no doubt.
Social media. I mean, they have really set the bar, and Fulton and Brewerton with Corey Reed have really moved up the ladder and stepped up their social media programming, and Canandaigua Speedway has been doing a great job with it as well. There's so much stuff that you can do. I mean, you could take online and you could say the first person to list us the correct winners from tonight's program by X amount of cutoff, the following week is going to get a free pass. You just go down the list. If anybody got it right, great. Next week, they get in for free. Simple as that. Just and you're engaging all these viewers. And with all the video stuff that has come about now and how much you can just simply do with a phone.
Yeah.
You could forget your written press release. Just do a video press release. Just do a highlight reel last week and say, and you're going to see this again this week. And here's the company logo. Just like that. Boom. And it's going to be so easy to engage people on stuff like that. And I think what a lot of tracks overlook is they do a great job of taking care of their sponsors and getting word out that this race is happening this day. Who's in it? You have stars that may only be known in the circles of Black Rock Speedway.
Sure.
Likewise for Canandaigua Speedway. Likewise for Fulton and Brewerton. It is rare outside of Oswego that you see a press release just simply profiling one of the weekly drivers. Not the main class driver even. You could do anybody, because if you've got four or five divisions, you got a large driver pool to pick from.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, that's something that the drivers too can kind of help us out with getting some of that information. We started putting the driver profiles back up on the website, and that not a lot of guys have taken advantage of that opportunity, but you know, as we get closer to that season opener,
I think that driver profile thing goes the same way as some of the topics we were touching on earlier. So there's been so many grand plans with driver profile stuff, yet nobody's ever been able to really harness that and make it into something that is, to even make it something that's tangible, so that you can go on a website and click on a link and bring up X stats and whatever. And it's a ton of background work to get the web pages formatted and get the content written. But, you know, it's one of those things where a lot of drivers don't fill those out now just because, like we talked about before, it's never materialized anything.
Right, exactly. You know, and that's something that, you know, as somebody who writes, you know, race reports and is always looking for, you know, five guys are going to win a feature this week, but what's the story? What's the hook that if, you know, you're writing something that people that weren't there are going to see, what's going to be that hook that says, wow, we really missed out on something this week, but, you know, we should go this week and see what happens. You know, it's
a way to make that happen is if every press release, every race report you write, they finish three wide at the checkered.
Yeah. Yeah. Then we'd have to put something out, you know, making sure we knew where the scoring loop is.
And, yeah.
and all of that, which, by the way, I have on my list of when I talk to Mike and Sue later this week, finding out just exactly where our scoring loop is.
that'll be a fun time.
Yeah, yeah.
I still can't believe that Mike is doing so much hands-on stuff day to day.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't actually know if he can do a whole lot right now. Now that the weather's broken a little bit, all we've gotten is rain and wet, so I don't even know if you can get on the track.
I exchanged...
It's pretty busy down there.
Yeah, I exchanged some messages with Sue, actually, this evening when I got here, and they actually have plans of being out at the Speedway all weekend this weekend.
Yeah.
Saturday's going to be a little chilly, but their plan is to really, you know, and they've already, you know, while we were at Motorsports Expo in Syracuse, they already had a crew helping out getting the kitchens cleaned and prepared, bathrooms and things like that. And, you know, this weekend they plan to go back and do more. Mike and the guys from Gen Trucking had gone out and used some kind of sweeper to get the snow off of the track. And, you know, so he wants to really take a look and see what's there in the track. And he did that a little bit as soon as some of that snow melted away. And he seems pleased with what he sees so far, because I know that was one thing that they wondered about, was are we going to have to try and mix in some new clay? And, you know, is it last minute? Is it not last minute? I've
right.
talked to a lot of drivers that, you know, said, you know, with people's experience with working with the clay and things like that, you know, that it wasn't as big a deal as maybe it used to be, you know, in years past. But, yeah, so they're going to be out at the track this weekend taking a look at things. We've actually got they've had a lot of paint donated from Sherwin-Williams to try and help spruce things up.
Nice.
You know, the plan was to try and get a community, you know, a race community spruce up day in the works, but the weather has just been such a challenge, you know.
Yeah.
Even tonight, I mean, just a crappy night tonight driving here. Nothing accumulating, thankfully, but
I don't know what happened to 51 and rain.
I know.
that was neither.
I worked in Rochester all day today, and I think I saw everything except for thunder and lightning. We had it all today.
Stone's throw from it too. Those were dark clouds.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's you know, they're getting ready to do. I mean, we're, like I said, I was talking to Sue earlier. You know, we've got to get up there. We've got to get the microphone and sound system tested out. I know one thing that a lot of people have told me about, and I, even as a media guy there last year, I didn't notice, was that when you're on the pit side of the track, you can't hear. You know, the sound system wasn't working on that side. So I know that was one thing that we got to look into. But, you know, just those opening things, like even as a guy who's raced there and has been going there as long as I can remember, you know, it's those kind of things that you don't
never
think about.
Give a thought.
Yeah, exactly. So we got to get some cable. We got to get with Mel Thomas, of course, who's, you know, Thomas Video will be doing the videos for us this year. We got to get some cable out. I know that they want to, and I don't know if this is short-term, long-term plan, but I know that, you know, they would like to get the VIP booths up with some flat panel TVs. So, you know, just those kind of things that they got to do, you know, to make that experience for your marketing partners as good as it can be.
Are there still that slick 1981 paneling?
yes. Actually, we rented a booth for my father's birthday last year, and it was still the same from when Lynn put those up all those years ago. But you know, I really believe that it's going to be, you know, I know that Mike's list is you know, 3 pages long of things that he'd like to see and like to do, and I know that, you know, Sue's list as the business manager is probably not quite as long as Mike's list. But, you know, the thing with Mike and Sue is they are just so passionate about racing. You know, Mike made it known to folks up at the expo that, you know, he encountered a change at his job. They wanted him to move to West Virginia. He said, you know, no, thank you. We have a racetrack that we're responsible for now. So, you know, for the last couple of weeks, Mike has really been able to put his full attention toward the racetrack, you know, trying to get things ready for opening night. And, you know, a busy, hardworking guy like Mike is, you know, they got people beating down his door wanting him to come work for them. So, you know, once we get up and running, you know, he'll be back to doing the Monday through Friday gig. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing is they are, you know, 100% focused in on getting getting the facility ready, getting the track ready. They've got a great crew that it's going to be managing the concessions. I know that that's...
That's been a topic.
That's been a topic that, that was very important to them. And something that came up quite surprisingly at the opportunity to meet those guys to talk about rules back in January.
Yeah. So
it was, you know, we were expecting to talk solely about rules and food came up. So
Sue mentioned that when she was here with Mike, she talked at length about how many different people came up and mentioned stuff about the concession stand.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you gotta keep them happy.
Yeah.
Easy as that.
Exactly.
Easy as that.
And I do want to mention, too, that for anybody that, you know, is a weekly supporter or is in need of season passes, there's still that deal on the table until March 31st for discounted season passes. Pit crews can purchase their concrete pads over in the pit area. Mike was actually talking at Motorsports Expo about adding more concrete pads. With the modifieds coming back full time this year, there is going to be a need for more of those. So, you know, again, that's kind of also that may be a project that extends into the early part of the race season, you know, with weather and everything. So,
right.
But all of those season passes for general admission, reserve seats, pit passes, the booths on the pit and the grandstand side, those are all available. The general admission and the pit passes, if you purchase your season pass, saves you over 20%
wow.
for the season. So
not bad.
You know, when you plot out, and it's different than it would have been in seasons past too, because now you're buying a season pass for weekly competition,
an entire season,
an entire season, exactly. So, you got till March 31st. So be sure to contact the Speedway or Sue Foster. All of her contact information is on the website, on the Facebook page. So I wanted to mention that as well.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm not going to be getting the season pass because we are loaded for this year.
I can only imagine.
It's crazy. But I do want to get down there for a couple races. And Mike and I have talked at length about trying to take more opportunities of doing this stuff live.
Yeah,
and you know, trips to Black Rock have been hot topics.
Yeah,
in the midst of all of it, just because the momentum around that track has been strong.
Absolutely. It's been strong. Well, and there's a lot of the cool thing I've talked about it with my brother and with Clint Miller is the fact that you know Canandaigua, Black Rock, Woodhull, the three tracks that are really closest to where we're based out of is all of those tracks have so much positive momentum this year. Woodhull's bringing in the Short Track Super Series for the mm-hmm. first time. That is going to be a huge show. I mean, the guys, the regular competitors at Woodhull, you take a guy like Billy Van Pelt, you know, 16-time champion down there. The look in his eye when he was talking about having such a huge field come into his home track with a show promoted by Brett Deo. It was really, really kind of neat talking to him about that this past weekend because, you know, other than the Dirt Series, you know, back in the 80s or 90s, this is the biggest show they've had in easily 20, 25 years.
Yeah, it's been a while since they had. Well, didn't they have an ROC Dirt Tour race there?
There may have.
I'm grabbing at
check
that,
with
to be honest. I thought
Paul
that...
Harkenrider with that, but I mean, for as far as
still for Billy Van Pelt to go out and make that comparison, that's got to make Brett Deo feel good.
Yeah, yeah, and of course, you know, they're carrying the short track Super Series and hustled the High Banks 51 on the side of the 78 car. And I mean, even to hear Billy talk about, you know, that deal with Grant Hilfiger. I mean, a couple months, you know, early mid-January last year, guy who had won 15 track championships at what didn't have a ride.
Right.
Grant Hilfiger comes along, and those guys go, and Billy does what Billy does.
Right.
You know? Doesn't matter what
wins
car.
Wins at Woodhull.
Doesn't, you know, brand new team. wins at Woodhull. And, yeah, so. But, yeah, all the tracks, just a lot of positive momentum. It's really fun to talk to these promoters and the guys that are going to race there because there's just so much excitement about where they get to race this year.
There's a lot of good stuff on the horizon going northeast of that area, too, with all the stuff going on with ESS.
No doubt.
They got a huge schedule put together. They've got their Speed Week intact now. We've got Utica Rome with their everything. I mean, pick a weekend. They're throwing some money around and drawing cars like crazy in Fulton and Brewerton. I mean, the Outlaw 200 weekend back on the schedule again this year. It's a fun time to be a race fan. As long as a couple of these black clouds eventually just either, you know, rid themselves of their rain and clear skies prevail, or they just simply, unfortunately, blow off and we go back about our business. Oh, that was a fast 45 minutes, wasn't it? Man.
Sure was, man.
Well, I think, what else, anything else that you wanted to hit on before we bug out of here?
Man, I'm not sure. I just...
Kevin Harvick going to win another championship in NASCAR?
I'll tell you, those guys are unbelievable right now. I don't think, certainly they are the class of the field right now. I mean, their strategy, you know, a pit stop on strategy away from, you know, contending for another win with their teammate, you know.
Right.
The only car that was going to be better than them was the one right out of the same shop. So, and you know, talking about that team, I just kind of thought of, you know, something else too that happened this week was, you know, the passing of Earl Baltus, you know, founder of Eldora Speedway.
Right.
And I heard an interview that Tony Stewart did earlier this week talking about Earl and you know, one of the first times that I had an opportunity to work with you here on 31st Lap was, you know, kind of reflecting back on a trip to Eldora that we took for that first truck race out there. And it's kind of a sad moment this week, losing Earl Baltus, a guy that just was the king of promoter, you know, dirt track promotion, short track promotion. So
it's weird sometimes, like there seems to be this threshold that you hearken back to looking back at racing and when you break into it in whatever capacity you consider your break, it seems like everybody at that time is frozen at that age.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's always like, I can't believe that Earl Baltus is gone. Well, the thing is you've been around racing for 15 years. He has aged 15 years.
Right.
So if you knew him when he was 60, he's 75 now.
Right.
And it's one of those jarring things that it seems like with every passing and every driver or promoter or whatever the story might be, it's always one of those things, well, it doesn't make any sense to me. But then you think about how long you've known the guy or how long they've been around racing or how long it was since you started and they were already a big name.
Exactly.
And it really forces some perspective on it.
It does, and you think about it that way too. You think about some of the top names, you know, for instance, on the Super Dirt Car Series. I mean,
those haven't changed.
Those haven't, but to speak to that, I mean, we're not always gonna have the, you know, Alan, Danny, Brett Hearn, Billy Decker. I mean, when you take some of those names, I mean, certainly there's a lot of young talent up and coming. But you take some of those names out of there, it's like it'll never, you know, the series will never be the same, you know?
Right, but that's our generation's argument, the same way that now the guys that remember the 60s and guys that remember the 70s and guys that were around in the 80s, they compare, well, Matt Shepard would never be as good as insert legendary name. So the next group of drivers, the next generation drivers, I don't think that we're going to lose Alan Johnson, Danny Johnson, Brett Hearn, and Billy Decker all in the same offseason. You know, those four. And we've got Jimmy Phelps, Robbie Bellinger, Larry White. We've got, Justin Ayers, another guy. Strong runners. So those guys are certainly contending, and that stuff's going to blend in. It seems like you never – here's an example. What year did Kenny Schrader retire? From, you know what I mean? You'd never
right.
when that ebb and flow and it's one at a time, it's sort of one of those things like, oh, it's, you know, where'd Kenny Schrader go? Kind of the same. I mean, and I know he still runs dirt track stuff periodically, but my point is, like, we're not going to lose those guys. So there's going to be that gradual progression out. But you're right, because that next generation is going to come up, and those guys are going to be like, this is the best driver that we've ever seen. Well, he was no Alan Johnson.
Right, exactly.
And anybody that says he was no Alan Johnson.
He was no Bob McCready back in the day at Canandaigua.
Right.
He was when the 9 car pulled in the pits and everybody's like, okay, well, we know who won.
Just put it back on the trailer.
Yeah.
He was no Jack Johnson. He was, I mean, you could, there's so many different names that you could pick from. And it was sort of the same idea. And that's eventually, it's a day that's going to come.
Yeah.
And, I'm not looking forward to it.
No. And to see how competitive these guys still are. I mean, they've gone through how many different generations of even the cars that they're racing. And the competition level and to see that, you know, Brett Hearn is still winning multiple championships a season and still contending for super, you know, and winning Middletown every year.
I can't believe I didn't. Stu Friesen.
Right.
How can you overlook Stu?
Right.
You know? And the thing is they're going to be arguing about Stu in the modified circles and the sprint car circles.
Yeah, exactly. He is... I just shake my head. I mean, there's nothing that he can't. I mean, he can. He jumped
Were you,
in
a. Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You just flirted with something right there and you pulled back on it. You were going to quote Days of Thunder. There's nothing he can't do in a race car.
Well,
you
I was dangerously close to that. I mean, there is as far as the different vehicles that he can jump in and just go. I mean, they're really, it feels like there isn't anything that he can't do and be successful at.
But Danny Johnson was doing that before all the technology was there. Just to set the stage for everybody at home. Just to spark that conversation. That's where we just were. Figured we should
just
go ahead and put that on the table.
Good stuff.
I love having Stu on the show. He's so much fun to talk to.
He is. He very definitely
does not hold back.
No. When you can walk up to a guy after a race and interview him, and they know that, you know, that audio is going to be used somewhere, and they come out with, well, I just, you know, I said, well, let's go balls to the wall and let's see what happens. You gotta love that.
Do you remember the broken trophy? Super Dirt Week for Stu?
No.
No?
Nope. Mm. Did we drop the...
I'll get into it more afterwards because I don't know. Mike actually is the one that told me the story.
Okay.
And I love it. I just don't have all the details right.
I've seen pictures of the trophy that was dropped with Danny Johnson. I believe that was a championship trophy that got dropped.
That was actually higher on the ladder.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's... that was an interesting one. But I mean, go back through the record book and look how many different decades Danny Johnson has had his name in championship books. With the I'm looking just at the Super Dirt Car series.
Right.
You know, when he tied for the 358 title, I think in like 99 or 2000, and he was winning championships before that, you know, track championships, finishing high in the point standings. He had a heck of a run there. For a while, and now here we are, right back in the midst of it. We went through the native Polkar era,
right?
And he's still doing great things in race cars. Just Stu.
I mean, even looking at their season last year, they were, you know, we're gonna go and race when we get a wild hair and want to go and race, and they ended up winning the track championship at Ransomville.
Right.
I mean, when you can go and do that, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Who was the last driver to accidentally win a track championship?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's just incredible.
Mm-hmm. So what, you itching yet? You going to venture into Pennsylvania with some of this weather break that everybody keeps threatening to have races, but then Mother Nature trumps those plans?
I I probably will not be traveling to Pennsylvania.
No.
I'd like to
get... Don't want to see it that bad, huh?
Well, I'll tell you why not. Because I was traveling out in Oregon a month or so ago, and I had the racing bug so bad that I drove 4 hours south to Chico, California to see a practice session. And drove 4 hours back after I'd been there for 2 hours watching practice. Drove back to my hotel room, and I thought, you know, that was totally not worth it see a practice session. But, you know, I don't think I'd be driving, all the way to Pennsylvania to see that first race. But I'm definitely looking forward to wherever our first race is going to be that we can get out to.
I think it's going to be touchy. Getting the season started is going to be touchy.
I mean, we've already seen Fonda has canceled practice. Actually, was it the opening night event?
I don't remember.
At Canandaigua earlier this week canceled their practice session for April 4th. So, yeah, anybody, I mean, I look at, Five Mile Point is wanting to get started that first weekend of it. I think that's going to be touchy, you know, whether or not that they can do that.
More power to them.
If they can,
that'd be great.
Yeah. Now, Five Mile Point, now that'd be a place that, you know, that would be within a reasonable driving day. You know, I could see myself going down there, but I don't know about Pennsylvania.
Well, Mike is dying to get. He's talking about Port Royal, and he's talking about Lincoln a ton.
Yeah,
he's dying to get down. Well, he loves sprint cars. We all know that.
Oh yeah,
he was dying to get down there, and we were at the Auburn Mall, and he goes, "I gotta get out of here. I gotta get out of here." Halfway through the show, he looks at his phone. He goes, "Well, I'll be here."
Time's not a problem anymore.
Yeah, it's no longer an issue. They nixed the program, and that was that. But
it's fun listening to Mike's passion for the sprint car racing.
And he'll tell you right off the top, he loves Eastern States, and he's definitely a modified guy. And Dean Reynolds is the same way. Dean loves modifieds, and the amount of history that guy's got packed into his head, modified-wise, sprint cars aside, the modified background that he could share is outstanding. And it reminds me, you were talking about people that we lost in motorsports. We lost Andy Fusco.
Yeah.
That was a big loss. Left a big hole in you know, Paul Small, we were up there in Auburn, he talked a lot about his time in working with Andy with some of the LAPCO shows and a little bit of Dirt Motorsports as well when he was over there. This is a big hole. And again, you know, the amount of racing knowledge that went with Andy, you don't replace that.
Right.
You just don't replace it.
And some of the things, you know, I thought was interesting, I think it was a publication in Auburn had put out an interview with one of his colleagues in the legal field. Mm-hmm. Is that we won't know how much we lost with Andy Fusco. You know, we won't know that right now. You know, it'll be felt in years to come, months to come. And you know, when you say that about somebody, that carries a lot of clout. I mean, that's a tremendous loss, not just for the racing community, but for everything Andy did within his community as well.
Oh, what do you think? We covered everything?
I think
We started flirting with some NASCAR stuff for a minute there. You know, Kurt Busch has rallied pretty effectively since he's been since his hearing and vindication, and looking strong. We talked about Harvick, Jeff Gordon struggling a little bit. Good call on the no tires and staying out on the alley, 8 laps on him. Got eaten up. He got as high as 8th. Didn't pit. Fell back. Still managed the top 10. I want to see the guy win. I mean, this is last year. Get a win.
Yeah.
For the love of God.
Rick Hendrick. And they're headed to Martinsville. Never a bad place for the 24 car to be headed.
No, he does okay there.
Yeah.
We'll table that conversation until next week. We'll hang on to that one.
Yeah.
So.
Talking, I know that Darrell Ruggles was on with you guys over the weekend. He was talking about Benefit Party. Mike Welch.
Did you see all that stuff?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah. That was great. That was great. Mike Welch, Blaine Smith got a big.
I saw
their big shindig.
You had a post on that. Lee Sanders.
Yes,
he's got his this weekend too in Manchester. I think I'm gonna make the trip over for that one.
Yeah.
That,
so if you guys are out in those areas,
one of the kids that I work with at the school, lives across the street from Lee and goes over and would be content to be given a stool in the corner adjacent to the sprint car.
Okay.
But he gets to do stuff on the car, and to what extent stuff is varies day to day. But he's active and he loves it and loves being hands on, and it's one of the only things that calms him down enough to where he can, you know, it requires so much focus that somebody like him is so focused. Perfect fit.
That's awesome.
And he's going to be there. And he's been bugging me since, when did Lee set the date? It was December. if I'm going to go. So I'm going to try and make a run over and see.
Very good.
See my buddy over there and meet Lee for the first time, who I feel like I'm related to with all that I know of him, hearing it from his neighbor there.
I remember Lee Sanders from the days of racing sprint cars at Paradise.
Really?
How long ago was that?
That was a long time.
and to see him still going in the sprint car is pretty incredible, because back in the day when they were, you know, when they were running the 360 sprint car at Paradise, Lee Sanders was the guy to beat.
Yeah.
Week in and week out, he was the guy. Occasionally you would see Lance Young over there. Of course, you know, he was an ESS guy, so what he could run there was limited. And before they got on the ESS tour, family member of mine, Bobby Carrick,
mm-hmm.
those two, week in and week out, battled for sprint car supremacy at Paradise. If you can imagine, you know, back in the day when they had the big cars like that on that track, Lee Sanders was the guy.
I only vaguely remember Paradise. Just vaguely, but the one enduring memory that I have being there was I kept waiting for the modifieds. There wasn't. It was Sportsman. That's
right.
The only thing you were going to see there was the Sportsman cars. And it completely blew my mind when this yellow 11X went by, because it looked like Steve Payne's car, but it wasn't his number, and they weren't modifieds. This doesn't make – and it was his brother.
Yeah.
And it was Bobby.
Oh, yeah.
Bobby's still – I still run into Bobby every now and then at the sign shop. I mean, at Seneca Graphics, not over at the race shop. But cool dude. He just – I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very good.
Well, next week we'll give you some programming updates through the course of the week and let you know exactly what's planned. I know Antonio Ramos out there in Savannah. Tony, he's a big fan. Always communicates with us. He's got a birthday coming up this week, so happy birthday to him.
Hey, man, there you go.
And Mike, I think Mike will be back. I'm anxious to see his new car and exactly how big it is. I mean, it's about the size of the table that's over there off your shoulder. So I'm anxious to see how that goes. And John, I mean, John, I'm anticipating he's going to be an expert and will be hired by Extreme Home Makeover, and we'll never see him again if this pace continues. But
could have a budding career with HGTV.
Yes, exactly. Yep. Enough of this podcast stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to TLC. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming in and hanging out and talking racing. It was a good time.
Appreciate the invitation, man.
No problem. I'm glad I was able to catch you.
Yeah.
Because it was late in the game.
Another half hour, and then we would have been on the phone.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought, okay, so we're going to have a quick 15-minute phone conversation, and we'll be out of here. And Brian Tompkins from Crash Course came in a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
And did sort of the same thing, told a lot of stories about.
I'll tell you what, I could listen to his stories for two or three episodes. I loved that.
Well, he's got more.
I'm sure he does. That was fun.
Progressively trying to coax him out of him. He goes, I don't really think that they're fit. You're probably right.
Yeah.
You're probably right. But we'll do this again sometime. It was a lot of fun. That's going to do it for this episode of the Crash Course. We're running out of time at this point, so we'll cap it here. We'll look forward to seeing everybody again next week. Thanks for joining us. That's going to do it for us. We'll see you next time. Come on, just play. There it is.
There
How hard is it? Just play. See you next time.